Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, looky here. Good evening. It is the 26th day of November, 2014, the night before Thanksgiving, 2014. Thanksgiving arriving a little late in the month as things go. There are, beyond this, four more days. We will begin the month of December with Moran Monday next week. Yep, definitely. And, of course, this is the beginning of a what I hope for many people is a long holiday weekend and wish was a long holiday weekend for everybody. From us here, our fondest, happiest hopes for a joyous feast, however you may celebrate it, wherever you may be. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, of course, our home. That's where you go if you want to... jump into the chat room, among other things. Chat room already gathering a happy contingent of members of the Horn Family Commune congregation, joining in for the full multimedia live real-time experience. Good evening, Carol Baker, News Ninja. Good evening, Doctor Who. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Lance. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. Good evening, Sergi. And good evening, of course, always, to our inveterate, indefatigable, longtime chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Of course, you can also go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com if you want to help us keep this community going. We run this not by selling ads for vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls and drop them back again on Swedish mattresses upon which you'll lie while waiting for your herbal hair regrowth tonic to work and or maybe some other part, never mind, as you contemplate that there's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your safest bet against inflation. No, none of that here. This is a community that self-sustains. Of course, if along the way you have a message you would like to share, we're always happy. I'm always happy to share that along to the Horn Family Commune congregation, and you're welcome to do that. We're trying to raise this evening... We actually raised $250 last evening, and that was wonderful. And that leaves us $300 to raise this evening to get us to even with the end of the month in light of the shortened week we have here. Now, I have happy news to report. It ain't $300. It's $275. And thanks go out to Leo for getting us started this evening. So hopefully... we'll have any number of folks jump in alongside Leo and help us get that out of the way and taken care of. So, also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, by the way, the tab there is contribute, but I don't think we've got the traditional mail address up there yet via the U.S. Postal Service. Just to double check. Bear in mind, if you would like to participate by the U.S. Postal Service, the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with the kind caveat that checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should instead be made payable to the Horn or Head On Communications. and that makes dealing with it much easier for Boss Man Wayne when he puts on his spider-proof glove to reach into the echo chamber that is often the horn mailbox. Thank you, one and all. Also at the horn, yes, the pop-out player, which works great on a PC. If you happen to be listening on a mobile device, we recommend the apps from Stitcher and or TuneIn Radio. Now, this is of course, yeah, I know, of course it is. It's not just the 26th of November. No, it's not just Wednesday. Not just hump day. Not just downhill to Friday. Oh, goodness me, sakes alive, no. This, indeed, is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the horn. Hallelujah, heart of glory. And we have heroic tales of faith this evening in the prayer meeting. But well, it is the night before Thanksgiving, so we had our own little... We had a little congregational Thanksgiving dinner down in the basement of the tabernacle, and the little old blue-haired ladies, I mean, they outdid themselves. By the time you get to be as good a cook as the little old blue-haired ladies are down in the fellowship hall, well, you are, among other things, expert at Thanksgiving. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. My goodness sakes, they must have roasted a dozen turkeys in the institutional ovens of the fellowship kitchen, and the ovens that were not roasting turkeys was making cornbread, because you can't make a half decent pan of dressing. And let's get a little vocabulary lesson in while we're at it. It ain't stuffing. The only people that call it stuffing are the corporate who make that stuff in a box or bag or whatever. It is dressing. Being the genius Thanksgiving preparers that they are, the little old blue-haired ladies of the fellowship hall kitchen would never ever put perfectly good homemade cornbread dressing inside the turkey. That's just disgusting. Besides, it keeps your turkey from roasting real good. Now, you can use the turkey drippings, and of course you would, and your turkey juices to moisten up all that cornbread and them homemade biscuits and the white bread that you've torn up with the finely chopped celery and the onions and the sage. Now there are two alternative pans of dressing as well for those that like it a little different, because there's one that's got some boiled egg chopped into it, and there's another one, and it's my particular favorite, that's got the oysters, the chopped up oysters baked into it. Because here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Virginia, this is the time of year traditionally when oysters used to show up in this inland mountain fastness. Because back when those things were delivered by trains, well, this was the only time of year when it was cold enough that you could transport them. And so, yeah, a pan of dressing with some oysters chopped into it. Oh, mercy. But, yes, there's turkey and there's dressing. And there in the fellowship hall, goodness sakes, of course, I don't think we ever have a fellowship dinner that the little old blue-haired ladies have not whipped up a monumental pot of mashed potatoes, which winds up, my goodness gracious, I think mashed potatoes should be a dessert. And there was the green bean casserole, of course, with the little French's French fried onions on top of it, baked in the oven. Oh, yes. And sweet potato croquettes, mercy sakes, you know, one of those jumbo marshmallows with a mixture of mashed up sweet potatoes and crushed pineapple and brown sugar wrapped around it, rolled in melted butter, then rolled in crushed cornflakes and baked with lots of marshmallows scattered across the top, so it makes a sort of golden melted marshmallow topping. Oh, and yes. We take our cranberry sauce out of the can. If it ain't got ridges, it ain't real. Some like the whole berry, some like the jellied. I'm partial to the jellied. and fresh bread. There was fresh bread, goodness sakes, you know, for the fellowship hall dinner. And we are traditionalists here. The dessert table featured both pumpkin and sweet potato pie. Oh, brethren and sistren, I tell you what. You would think at a time of year like this that the deacons might actually feel a little bit charitable toward the little ones, but they had to make do with mashed potatoes for their dessert because, oh, there wasn't getting anywhere near those pumpkin and sweet potato pies as long as the deacons were on hand. But quick as they had gotten done and eaten the Delta there at the end of their slice of pie, well, they went on upstairs and went outside to stand in the parking lot of smoking with the sinners. But, brethren and sistren, we have chased them out of the parking lot. They've had to put out their cigarettes. We've run them through the vestibule and past that 20-year-old bowl of buttermints. We got them down front waiting here with the plates to pass it among the congregation when we have our offertory hymn, brethren and sistren. Then when we're all done, they can sit back down and nod off happily to sleep. And the night before Thanksgiving, I won't even hit them with the flip gun when they do. But, brethren and sistren, with every head bowed and every eye closed, the deacons, whose heads will not be bowed nor their eyes closed, well, they're about to pass the plate. They're about to pass the plate, brethren and sistren, and we have only $230 to go. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Asa. Thank you very kindly for taking it down that far. It is sincerely appreciated. So the plate will pass there amongst the faithful, and every head bowed, every eye closed as we call the minister of music up, brethren and sistren, for our offertory hymn. Brother minister of music, if you would, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, mercy dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too, wouldn't you, wouldn't you? I love you. Oh, welcome, brethren and sistren, to prayer meeting Wednesday. Out on the horn. Glory, hallelujah. Now I want you to get on up out of your seats and onto your feet and come out away from the pews and come on down that blood red aisle and fall upon your knees at the altar and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you from the server on high. Amen, amen. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Bob Kincaid, and this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Oh, brethren and sistren, I tell you what, we're gonna feed your spirit. Ha! Glory, we're gonna satisfy your soul. Amen, amen. Jesus, praise Jesus, we are going to touch you in place. No, we ain't going to do, no, I ain't touching nobody. But we do have a Thanksgiving message for you, brethren and sistren, from former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson, who wants you to know about the real meaning of Thanksgiving. Take it away, Marion.
This small, hearty band of Christians set the stage for what would become the freest, most prosperous, and some would argue the most spiritual nation on earth, all based on biblical principles.
Ladies and gentlemen, our warning should be today, we can't lose that. And when you have courts that are taking away the very essence of our democracy, the very, well, the ground from which this great country came.
Tell us about that. Tell us about that purity of essence coming, Pastor, Brother, Minister, Marion. Tell us, what is it?
When courts are saying that is unconstitutional, when they're exalting aberrant lifestyles and saying that's constitutional, when they're defying the very essence of this nation, they are sowing the seeds not of a new prosperous nation, but of the destruction of the one that's already here. That's why in the archives the word is very true. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. Eternal vigilance. And if we're not vigilant, we're going to lose it.
Yeah, we're not eternally vigilant. We're going to lose it. Did I miss something there? Are we losing it or getting it tooked away? It sounds like the court. What are these aberrant lifestyles? Oh, sorry, brethren and sisters. I'm a little slow from all the tryptophan and the turkey down there in the fellowship hall. It took me a minute to realize that he was just coding up a whole bunch of gay hate there. But old Pat, he understands the purity of our essence and seed sowing. Of course, that's not exactly that, but the history of Thanksgiving is a little more complex than that, and I don't recall anything about the homos in the Mayflower Compact. I mean, it was a compact, after all. But poor old Pat ain't even going to get to enjoy his Thanksgiving turkey dinner. Just to worried about whether or not the turkey was gay or not. I have referenced from time to time our good friend and the Internet's most brilliant historical satirist, Eugene Finnerman. He has a message today regarding the first Thanksgiving. He writes, as the chief of the neighborhood, it was Massasoit's responsibility to get rid of the Europeans. They could not be ignored. The Hurons to the north had tried coexisting with their intruders, those who seemed to call themselves the Mondieur. Now the poor Hurons were being enslaved to strange rituals of serving red wine with muskrat, but white wine with pelican. If these Europeans were so meticulous about food, Massasoit would use their obsessive quirks against them. He would convince these aliens that the local food was disgusting, so they might as well leave. He plotted the most inedible menu and then brought over the abominations as gifts. The main course was what the tribe called mutant chicken. None of the locals would eat anything that ugly. For a side dish, there were bogberries. Those tongue-shriveling fruits were said to be healthy, but most people preferred scurvy. The most laughable squash and roots were passed off as delicacies rather than weeds. And finally, and most cruel of all, the Europeans were served maize. That alone should have sent them fleeing home for dental floss. But, to Massasoit's amazement, these Europeans were impervious to the awful parody of a meal. He had failed to realize that these were different Europeans. Yes, the Mondeur would have been horrified, but these aliens were called English, and they had no taste buds or teeth. So, thus, a brief history via Eugene Finnerman, FinnermanWorks.com. Your RDA of irony, and thanks to Eugene. Now, so please remember, as you sit down to carve your turkey or your ham or your lamb or your spam or your hamburger helper or whatever it is tomorrow that you partake of, if you partake of anything, and I certainly hope everybody's able, please remember to say a prayer for, if you're the praying type, for Pat Robertson, who's probably going to be munching on a gay turkey. Or maybe it's not a gay turkey. Maybe it's a demon possessed turkey. You know, they're everywhere in Pat's world. But being as how this is prayer meeting Wednesday, brethren and sisters, and we do celebrate the loving grace and glory of Christ Jesus. Let's take a little trip down to Houston. Yeah, let's do. Olivia Blair was a devoted servant of Christ Jesus. And in return for her devotion, the loving God, creator of the universe, blessed her with a 93-year lifespan. Of course, the loving, all-knowing creator of the universe insisted as a condition subsequent to that 93-year lifespan that the last 2 years of that lifespan be spent in a nursing home or a hospital. And then the loving, almighty, all-forgiving creator of the universe made sure that Olivia Blair spent the last few months of her existence in a coma. Think of it as dress rehearsal for eternity. But glory, Jesus did finally call Olivia Blair home. And she, here in this veil of tears, she had called her home church for 50 years. The Fourth Missionary Baptist Church in the Houston, Texas area. So the day finally came when Ms. Blair shuffled off this mortal coil, went to join the choir eternal, and her daughter, Barbara Day, went about the business of dealing with Ms. Blair's earthly remains. So naturally, she went over to the Fourth Missionary Baptist Church to have Mama's funeral there. Over at the Fourth Missionary Baptist Church in Houston, the pastor is one Walter F. Houston. Walter F. Houston, being told that Ms. Blair wanted to have her funeral there, said, "Uh-uh, no. She can't have her funeral here. She hadn't tithed enough in the last few years while she's either been in a nursing home or a hospital or a coma. Because a coma is no excuse for not tithing at the Fourth Missionary Baptist Church, and for all I know, a whole bunch of other Christian gospel sharps." Barbara Day told KRIV, "It was like the last insult in the world. There was nothing else that I could do for my mommy but funeralize her in the church that she loved and worshipped all of her life, even as a little girl." But Pastor Houston said she had not paid her dues and not attended the church in recent years. Ms. Day said, "There's no explanation for anybody that's been paying dues for a church that long for him to make me have to roll my mother's body around town. And somebody finally picks her up and says, yeah, we'll do the best we can. They knew she was ill. They don't care. All they care about is getting money, 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 money. Even, and on the eve of Thanksgiving, this is a piquant phrase to say the very least, even retail stores give people more respect than that. I don't understand why we've become so commercialized with religion. What does this have to do with God? Why can't I give my mother her last wish to be funeralized in a church that she loves so much? Eventually, Walter F. Houston, pastor, brother, minister, servant of the Almighty, explained to Isaiah Carey over at KRIV that Ms. Blair had no longer been a member of the church because she hadn't given it financially in the last 10 years. Meanwhile, Tyrone Jacques runs something called PimpPreacher.com, and he asked, he said, I asked the pastor, I said, well, why didn't somebody go check on her? Why didn't someone go reach out to her? And his reply to me, this is Pastor Walter F. Houston, it's up to the family to know if notify him. And Tyrone Jacques said, the comment that really set us off was, if the family cared so much, why didn't they at least send a dollar to the church a week to reserve her membership? So then Tyrone Jacques said, Pastor, Minister, Brother Houston, even though your church is closed on Friday and I have offered to pay the cost to have this funeral in your church, you're still refusing to allow this funeral for a member who's been part of this ministry for 50 years? To which, because the goddess of irony never sleeps. And don't miss a lick, nowhere. You want to talk about omnipotence and omniscience. Goddess of irony's got it. Because she caused Pastor Brother Minister Walter F. Houston to reply, membership has its privileges, you know, just like American Express. Oh, Christianity, especially this time of year, just fills you with that warm, fuzzy feeling, doesn't it? Now, meanwhile, and this takes us back to the topic that rather occupied our attentions last night. And by the way, thanks to everybody who reached out and said, and I heard it from more than one person, that last night was one of the best programs they have ever heard. That means a lot. Because it tells me that folks realize that this is not simply some tawdry entertainment. That it is, in fact, real. That it does, in fact, reach out and touch and educate and foster meaningful dialogue and understanding. And apparently that happened for a lot of people. But the topic that occupied us last night was, of course, the grand jury process, particularly in relation to the 12 rounds of pistol ammunition that Darren Wilson pumped into the being of Michael Brown, whom, we might recall, Darren Wilson was allowed by a prosecuting attorney to refer before the grand jury to as a demon. Yeah, all that. So, I and particularly Carol and Angry did our earnest best to explain some things about the grand jury process that had never, to the best of my knowledge, seen the light of day on any of the for, in any of the for-profit media. And I monitored some even today. Still, no talk about it. I mean, you've got legal analysts who are paid princely sums in the for-profit media, none of whom apparently even know that you can present a case to a grand jury more than once. Don Lemon out there babbling on once he gets done talking about the smell of the marijuana. Don Lemon babbling on about how we must respect the grand jury's decision. And not much better anywhere else. Let's see, there was an interview over to the Fox News about how... let me see if I can find it real quick. I got it right here. Oh, here we go. Yeah. It was on yesterday's Fox and Friends. Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade and, oh, what's her name? Elizabeth Hasselbeck or whatever. They hosted remotely a character by the name of Jeff Rorda. Rorda. R-O-O-R-D-A. Rorda. Who was there to talk about poor, poor, put upon Darren Wilson, who, interestingly, unlike Michael Brown, ain't dead and did not have 12 rounds of police-approved ammunition pumped through his corporeal being, ending his ability to be a corporeal being on this little tiny mote of dust in a humongous universe. Yeah, right, that Darren Wilson. I hear.
This is a Fox News alert. People across the country who have nothing to do with the case in Ferguson are reacting to the grand jury's decision not to indict Officer Darren Wilson with violence and looting. But how?
Wait. We're going to indict Officer Darren Wilson with violence and looting? Throw me down the stairs, my hat! Throw me from the train a kiss! Oh, Elizabeth Hasselbeck. You are special. But did you notice that people who had nothing to do with the case in Ferguson, because, you see, apparently Elizabeth Hasselbeck, who I think we can all agree has never read much of anything, especially has never read John Donne. You know, because people all over the country were protesting who had nothing to do with anything that happened, you know, in Ferguson. Then there's John Donne. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, and I think we can all agree that Elizabeth Hasselbeck is, in fact, a clod. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor of thy friends, or thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. It just doesn't toll for Elizabeth Hasselbeck, who in fact is a clod. There I go, name-calling again. Anyway, back to Liz. Testify, Liz.
Not to indict Officer Darren Wilson with violence and looting, but how are families reacting? The mother of Michael Brown collapsed outside of the police station as her family pleaded for peace in this statement. We are profoundly disappointed that the killer of our child will not face the consequence of his actions. We respectfully ask that you keep your protest peaceful. Answering violence with violence is not an appropriate reaction. And here is Officer Wilson's statement.
I would like to thank you all for standing up for me during this stressful time. I wish I could attend and meet you, hug you, and personally thank you for all of your continued support. However, due to my and my family's safety, I am unable to. Please keep my family in blue in your hearts and prayers. They have all made a sacrifice to their own lives in order to work the excessive hours through the heat and rain to ensure that the riots and protests in Ferguson were as safe as they could be.
Well, Officer Wilson's friend Jeff Rorta has talked to Darren and joins us this morning. Thank you for being with us, Jeff.
Does anybody remember, because I think we featured it rather prominently at the time, CNN's coverage of the judicial events surrounding the charging of the young men in Steubenville, Ohio, who gang-raped a little girl from West Virginia, and Candy Crowley and whoever the woman was standing outside the courthouse there in Steubenville spent copious amounts of time bemoaning what would happen to the poor young rapists and how their lives would be affected by being charged with a crime, rape, that they, committed. Get the hockey puck. Get the duct tape.
What did Officer Wilson have to share with you that you can tell us this morning?
Well, Elizabeth, his thoughts, which is obvious from his statement, are with his brothers and sisters in law enforcement. He's very concerned about their welfare.
Doesn't worry a good goddamn about the welfare of the Brown family. Why? I mean, after all, as Carol notes, Emmett Till's killers were at least indicted. This is 2014, and today child murderers are, set free. But just one point of clarification, Carol, the man was never charged with anything, so he wasn't set free. He has simply always remained free. Details. Oh, by the way, Piedra reminds me of something via the chat room. St. Louis County PA Robert McCulloch, is prosecuting one cop. Oh, yes. He's prosecuting a black St. Louis County police officer because that police officer struck a Metrolink passenger with his baton. The charge is felony second-degree assault. I guess that could also be called assaulting while black with a badge. But let's check back in and find out about the tender sensitivities of Darren Wilson.
You can imagine him being a police officer and having to sit on the sidelines while officers are in harm's way as a result of something that happened to him.
Hey, Mr. Rurda! Can you imagine being the mother of an 18-year-old young man who was getting ready to head off to further his education, and then one morning you get a phone call, and he's had 12 rounds of police-approved ammunition pumped through his body and is no longer alive on the earth? Can you imagine that, Officer Ruda? Guess not.
It's hard for him to watch.
Is he fearful for his own family's safety and his own? Did he make remarks with regard to that?
Well, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about when or how I talked to him or his whereabouts, but obviously safety is a grave concern for him and his family.
And we respect that. Understanding his main concerns there, the community and complete unrest and violence as we saw. You were there. What are you anticipating moving into today? And more importantly, what do you want people to know about Officer Wilson? What kind of guy is he? Who is he?
Well, listen, he's just a cop who
He's just a cop who pumped 12 rounds of police-approved ammunition through the body at about, some several feet's distance of an 18-year-old young man who did not pose a threat to him, but whom Officer Wilson had by then determined was, in fact, a demon. No, really.
Responding to a call for a baby, an African-American baby, who was gravely ill and...
Really? The sick baby story? Who doesn't know the sick baby story now? It was an African-American baby that was gravely ill. Except for the fact that it wasn't. But see there, he responds to calls for sick African-American babies.
You know, it wasn't his area. He responded because, you know, he's there to serve that community. And
occasionally shoot and kill them.
He observed a crime in progress, suspect from a crime that had just occurred as he was leaving there. And then the rest, I guess, is history now. But
well, did he observe a crime in progress? Or was he informed of a crime? Was a name given? No. Did he observe a crime in progress? No. He observed a young black man walking down the street. Not running for his life down the street. Not carrying a TV down the street that he just looted or some such. Just a black kid walking down the street.
You know, this is a trying time for him and our entire community.
Yeah. It's a trying time for him and the entire police community. You know, why would anybody over at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, even want to know whether it's a trying time for, say, a couple of parents who no longer have a son?
That absolutely is. You know,
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth. I'm glad you could clarify that.
And our hearts break, you know, I think for both families that are involved as you see this unrest.
Oh, finally! Elizabeth's heart's breaking for both families that are involved. Gee, I wonder which family buried a child.
What would his family want to say, in your opinion, to the family of Michael Brown, you know, hearing that he did not receive the consequence that he deserved? Can't fall easily on their ears.
Wait, what? We're worried about the Wilson family because the Brown family said he did not receive the consequence he deserved? Hey, Elizabeth, get away from the woodpile. No, you don't need to build any more crosses. No, we need the wood. It's cold.
Well, of course not. You know, we believe in a system of justice in this country, and Prosecutor McCullough, to his credit, introduced every single piece of physical evidence, every witness statement, every piece of forensic evidence, and now he's being criticized harshly for introducing all that evidence. Imagine the tsunami of criticism that would have followed if he'd have withheld even one piece of evidence.
The only, we can't imagine that. But the thing is, where would that tsunami of criticism have been coming from? You know, from the Klan and their buddies who are the supporters of Darren Wilson. That's who. That's who would be tsunamiing. There would be a tsunami of criticism if Darren Wilson's case had been presented to the grand jury just as the prosecutor would have presented any other felony case. Because, of course, the grand jury is presented by the prosecutor with suggested charges. They don't just have all the evidence thrown in their lap and say, yeah, screw it, you figure it out, I'm out of here. The only people tsunamiing Officer Ruda would have been people engaging in a white privilege wallow. But at least somebody out there speaking up for poor, voiceless Darren Wilson. By the way, interesting fact for the evening being presented by Carol. You know, remember, there have been 2,200 members of the National Guard in Ferguson. Carol points out the standard manning requirements for a light infantry battalion in the United States Army is 567 men. Therefore, at 2,200 troops in Ferguson, Missouri is at the equivalent of about 3.9 light infantry battalions or a light infantry brigade's worth of combat troops. Yeah. There are more troops in Ferguson, Missouri right now than there are in under the United States flag in Iraq. Note coming in relative to Thanksgiving from our buddy Luda. Bob, in my household and many Native households, in good old America. We refer to it as Kick a Pilgrim Day. A little late in the game for that, isn't it, Luda? But, I mean, no. Remember, white diseases had already wiped out the population up and down the east coast of North America, so that resisting the white colonization of North America was all but impossible. Note from Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, I hope you got a chance to read the article about our police shooting, and I was just getting to that. The grand jury didn't initially return a true bill. Our attorney general called bullshit and returned the case to the grand jury and got a true bill. See, and you know what? I even sent that linky along a couple of times as I was tweeting last night. And it's not like it's some ancient case either. This is worth considering. This is in regard to a Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department officer. The date of the story is early last year. I mean, this isn't something from 5, 10, 15 years ago. In Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, the case of police officer Randall Carrick was presented to a grand jury. The first time his case was presented to a grand jury, the grand jury said, "What? Indict a police officer?" However, recognizing that an injustice had been done, the case was presented a second time with no legal difficulties whatsoever. I mean, now, granted, the police officer had shot to death an unarmed Charlotte, North Carolina man. And after the first no true bill, his legal team went running to the court and said, "Well, you can't do that." The court said, "Yeah, you can." Of course, defense attorney Michael Green back then said, "Well, how in the world is that grand jury supposed to go into that courtroom and make a decision when you've also got the NAACP outside?" I don't know, was the NAACP braiding nooses or something? No. Just standing outside, as so often the community of color has had to do in this country, begging and pleading for some semblance of justice. On the second presentment, twice as many witnesses against the killer cop were sent to testify to the grand jury as the first time through. See? It can be done. But being as this is prayer meeting Wednesday, don't try to tell that to proud son of Stanford University, Brian Fisher.
No, no. And I got to tell you, if Eric Holder were to do this, I believe this would be a blatant violation of the Constitution. I realize legal.
Yeah, because you're stupid, Brian Fisher. I mean, dumber than a bag of hammer handles. Now he's not even going to talk. He's not even going to consider the possibility of a second presentment by a special prosecutor to a grand jury impanel to hear it in the next term. Oh no. No, he's worried about that thug Attorney General, Eric Holder. Mm-hmm. Who was it? Andrea Tanteros, wasn't it? Over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, who said, "Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice like the Black Panthers."
To do this, I believe this would be a blatant violation of the Constitution. I realize legal people disagree with me on this, but I just think they're plain wrong, based on the plain meaning.
You think the people who have actually studied this and actually went to school to learn this stuff, Brian Fisher, are just wrong. you know, because, well, you're Brian Fisher, right? And based upon the plain meaning, I can't wait to hear this.
Of the Fifth Amendment.
Plain meaning of the Fifth Amendment. There are how many years of jurisprudence on the plain meaning of the Fifth Amendment? But here's the noble pleader, Brian Fisher, to make a hash of it all and just come up with the Fifth Amendment according to Jesus Christ.
Because the first two words in the Fifth Amendment are no person.
Well, that settles everything. The planet has no people on it.
No person in America, no American citizen, no individual.
None of which appears in the Fifth Amendment, okay? Let's just be, it doesn't say no person in America or no person in the world, no. Can you imagine, because see, the members of the Horn Family Commune congregation are pretty civically informed. Imagine the poor, benighted, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, floor-rolling, strychnine-swigging, serpent-handling goobs who listen to Brian Fisher. Yeah, it makes sense to me. You know, that in America or in this country, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arriving in the land or naval forces, which, of course, is where the authority comes from for the Uniform Code of Military Justice, or in the militia, same, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. None of that applies. So, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury. Take it away, Brian.
No person shall be subject for the same offense.
Oh, he just jumped over a whole bunch of stuff. Wait a minute. How'd that happen?
America. No American citizen. No individual. No person shall be subject for the same offense.
See, it doesn't say that. He said this is how the Fifth Amendment starts. No. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment to a grand jury. Yada, yada, militia. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. I want to... Explain the reasoning and the mind that conceived it, you know?
To be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. Period. The Constitution doesn't say the state gets a crack at somebody, and then if they're not able to put that guy away, then the federal government can come in and take a swing at him.
God, Brian. One wonders how you get your shoelaces tied in the morning. You sure that wasn't like the Stanford University of Drawspunky on the back of the matchbook that gave you that degree? What kind of degree, Brian? Okay, let's... Maybe there are other people who are thinking this. I mean, we know there's a lot of other people, you know, the same people who tune into American Family Association Radio to blow Mississippi stand are thinking this. There's only one problem. The crimes that might have been charged against Darren Wilson were state crimes that could have extended everywhere from murder in the first degree all the way to involuntary manslaughter. Okay? And they have their various elements. Did intentionally, with malice aforethought, kill, shoot, etc., one Michael Brown, yada, yada, yada. like I said last night, every element of that has to be met. But you know what? The elements of first-degree murder are not the same as the elements of second-degree murder, and the elements of second-degree murder are not the elements of third-degree murder, voluntary manslaughter, or involuntary manslaughter. You cannot be convicted for first-degree murder and second-degree murder, or second-degree murder and involuntary manslaughter. No. Because the elements are such that if you've got first-degree murder, you can't have second. If you've got the elements of second, you can't have first. Because they are mutual and exclusive. However, there is no element within any of those charges, those state charges, that, for instance, the said Darren Wilson did intentionally violate the civil rights of the decedent Michael Brown. That is an element that none of the state charges contain. And so it is not double jeopardy for a federal offense to be charged, even if there had been a conviction on one of the state offenses, as long as there are different elements of the crimes, because that makes them double, that makes them different crimes, and therefore, within the language of the Fifth Amendment, he is not being tried for the same offense. Now, all of this goes without saying. I mean, I just want you to understand how ignorant, how painfully and utterly dim the right wing in this country are. Brian Fisher, from the beginning of this clip, is saying that the federal government does not have jurisdiction to charge Darren Wilson. Okay? I don't want you to think that I'm making anything up.
If Eric Holder were to do this, I believe this would be a blatant violation of the Constitution. And I realize legal people disagree with me on this, but I just think they're plain wrong based on the plain meaning of the Fifth Amendment.
But what about the plain meaning of same offense? What if the feds were to charge civil rights violation, whereas, you know, whatever would happen at the state level in Missouri? But.
Because the first two words in the Fifth Amendment are no person. No person in America, no American citizen.
Now remember, when that says no person, remember, Brian Fisher is so ungodly weird, he thinks that includes little wads of cells called blastocysts that haven't even necessarily effectively attached to the uterine wall of a mother. That's what he thinks person means.
No individual, no person shall be subject for the same offense.
By the way, you keep the hockey puck handy. Because in a minute you're going to realize how far out in front of Brian Fisher you are in terms of intelligence and just simple fact knowledge and understanding.
To be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb.
Yeah, see, if you read it slower, then Cletus from Dumbfuckistan will think you really know what you're talking about.
Period.
Yeah.
The Constitution doesn't say the state gets a crack at somebody, and then if they're not able to put that guy away, then the federal government can come in and take a swing at him, see if they can put him away. No, that is not what the Constitution says.
Except it is. May I turn your attention briefly to the case of one Byron Della Beckwith. Byron Della Beckwith. Byron Della Beckwith was a Klansman. Byron Della Beckwith was a Klansman from Mississippi. Greenwood, Mississippi. He was the killer of Medgar Evers. His case was presented to a grand jury in Mississippi, and the grand jury actually indicted him. Twice. But twice because of the way pettit juries, trial juries, were rigged in Mississippi stand. Twice his charge came back with a hung jury. Now, this is another one of those law moments. A criminal felony verdict must be unanimous. If it's a jury of 12, all 12 people have to vote guilty. If one person votes not guilty, he walks. If everybody votes not guilty, he walks. But if you've got 11 to convict and one that says, no, hell no, never, 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 I ain't changing my mind, that results in what's called a hung jury. And twice, Byron Delabecquith was tried for the murder of Medgar Evers. But at both of those state level trials, all it took was one Klansman on the jury to say, nope, I ain't never going to vote to convict. I'll stay here as long as I have to, and I'll keep voting no. Enter the federal government. It took until 1994 and a whole bunch of continued investigation and the feds weren't even involved. It wasn't a federal trial. But when the jury finally consisted of 8 black and 4 white jurors, the 8 black and 4 white jurors heard the evidence that said, well, of course he's guilty of killing Medgar Evers. And he was finally sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In 1997. And he spent 4 years, or a little less, in prison for the slaughter of Medgar Evers. But justice was, to some degree, done. And he lost on the claim of double jeopardy. Brian Fisher, however, is not going to tell that to any of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, floor-rolling, strychnine-drinking, serpent-handling, Crisco-anointing listeners. He's just going to make sure that they understand that a white man is being oppressed by the federal government, just like we was during the Reconstruction.
The Constitution says no person. That's period. No ifs, ands, or...
No, dumbass. It says a whole lot of words after no person. There's no period after no person, you liar, you Christian.
Or buts. Officer Wilson is a person. Does the Fifth Amendment apply to him? Absolutely. No person shall be subject for the same offense, that is the shooting of Michael Brown, to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. He was just put in jeopardy of life or limb.
No, he wasn't. See, this is why, because I wanted to have that clarity on hand. This is why I went to the great lengths that I did last night to explain the grand jury process. During the grand jury process, no jeopardy attached at all. Because the grand jury does not have the power to enter a verdict. A grand jury can only answer two questions. Is it more likely that a crime was committed? And if it's more likely that a crime was committed, is it more likely than not that the person who is before the grand jury is the person who committed the crime? Just more likely than not. It doesn't even get anywhere near the constitutional standard of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. A grand jury merely asks the question, is this case solid enough that we should pass it to another group of 12 citizens to let them hear it and make a final decision. A grand jury is, in effect, a sort of clearinghouse of criminal charges. But don't tell that to Brian Fisher and the upstanding, Bible-believing, God-fearing Christians, fundamentalist, evangelical of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi Stan. You heard it. Let's go back. You heard him say that a presentment to a grand jury constitutes jeopardy. He is one of two things. He is either dumber than a rotten, hollered-out stump, or a liar. Wait, maybe he's both.
Shall be subject for the same offense, that is the shooting of Michael Brown, to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. He was just put in jeopardy of life or limb.
Uh-uh.
No indictment was returned.
He
cannot be subject to that process a second time.
Wrong. And I still maintain, and I will continue to maintain, that the appropriate thing to do would, in fact, be for people to take all of that energy, transfer it to Jefferson City, Missouri, take a few thousand people, keep them around the capital of Missouri, and not go home, just like they did for 100 days in Ferguson. Don't go home. Don't leave until the governor of the state agrees to appoint a special prosecutor, or the attorney general, whoever's got jurisdiction to do it. Do not leave until a special prosecutor is appointed to present this case, and this case only, to the next available grand jury. Oh, good word. Good word, Devin. Chris Goins. Extra greasy. So hearing something like that from Brian Fisher, and knowing that he's got at least, you know, thousands of Americans who listen to him, it becomes more comprehensible how people fail to understand the very basic meaning of our civic processes. People get these mistaken opinions because they are deliberately told lies by people who have a vested interest in seeing people ignorant, because then they can be further led. Interesting comment in the chat room coming from Doctor Who. The difference between white progressives and white conservatives. White progressives listen and learn. White conservatives think they know everything, which means they won't listen or learn anything. And I will add editorially, Doctor, know nothing. Oh, we do have a lovely gathering in the congregation this evening. In the chat room to the Cathedral of Common Sense. Good evening, Anatole. Like I said, Carol Baker, News Ninja's there. Devin's with us, Doctor Who, I already mentioned. Dwayne just popped in. Good evening, morning, afternoon. Hello, HZ. Good evening, John, Kathy, Kelly. Good evening, Michael and Mr. Gibson, Piedra, Ron, Sergi, Stockton, Larry, and Texas T. I read in the chat room a few minutes ago via Kathy that Todd's not feeling so good. So I hope Todd feels a whole lot better, and I know we all do. you can tell him when he rouses that we're all thinking of him. Please, Kathy. Oh, there's more. Dear God, there's more. And we'll get to it when we come back from a break. No, let's not take a break. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Would that be me?
That would be you.
How are you doing, Bob?
Oh, I'm pretty good, pretty good. Yeah, I'm sorry. I got about halfway confused.
Yeah. Well,
What's happening, boss man?
Same old, you know, still fighting and, you know, continuing to fight. You know, I mean, this last election, we all took a real ass-kicking.
An ass-kicking administered to us, at least in West Virginia, by about 21% of the eligible voters.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, we didn't get our people out to vote, you know, and that's what happens when you don't get your people out to vote. So, but, you know, we got too many people running around doing their best impersonation of Chicken Little and stuff, and, you know, the world's going to end and we got to do this and that. You know, I just go in completely the other direction. You know, I think we should put on more people and fight harder than we ever have.
Well, amen, because the other side and, that's hollering the world's going to end, what is it they think is going to make the world end?
You know, because we failed, they're going to tear us apart and all that. I mean, to me, it gives us a perfect opportunity to... I've been talking to the people in my local for 17 years and telling them, you guys don't get off your ass and do something and, you know, get involved in politics and that. Everything that you work so hard to get, you're going to lose if you don't elect the right people. And now, you know, they failed to do that and we lost this election. For the first time in 83 years, Republicans control the Senate and the House in West Virginia. And now those people are going to see what, you know, they're capable of and see that, you know, nobody was bullshitting them. This is what these people are about. And, you know, I still think that if we get enough people together and get fired up, that we could stop them. And our job now is to minimize the damage that they do in the next 2 years, and in 2 years reverse what just happened. And I think there's a real good chance of doing that. I think there's a real good chance of doing that. You know, the things are... People are starting to wake up. They're starting to really get upset. This thing in Ferguson has proved that. I mean, you know, did you ever think that Monday night that there would be that they would, I mean, yesterday in New York City, they shut down 3 major bridges.
Yeah, and they shut down major highways in Dallas, Nashville, Los Angeles, Oakland.
Yeah. All over the country. And, you know, that's a great thing. That's a great thing. And, you know, the right, you know, better fear that because, you know, well, people have had enough. People are getting to the point where enough is enough. And this thing in Ferguson, I mean, this is the most upsetting thing, and I'm so glad to see that I'm not the only one upset. I mean, that whole thing was a setup deal from the moment that kid laid on that side, or on the street, dead. From that very moment, it was all set up. It was all orchestrated. This guy killed that kid. He killed that kid. And, now they have to figure out how they're going to get around it, how they're going to get by it. This whole grand jury thing and all that, and, I mean, how long did all that take?
Well,
I mean, it's been 3 months anyway.
Well, sure, and dig it, and I don't think I've even mentioned this. Darren Wilson, okay, there's a term that gets used at least around here in lawyering. Darren Wilson got woodshedded. That means he lawyered up, and his lawyer worked with him day in and day out to construct a narrative down to the very words he would use.
That is exactly right, and all of those words are bullshit.
And it was, and there was at least, what, a month of that?
At least. And then, you know, building up, okay, the grand jury, what, how long ago did the governor announce that they were calling out the National Guard? That was, what, 5 or 6 days before?
Yeah, a week ago.
A week? And every day on the news, all you hear about is a grand jury decision, and what will it decide, and this expert, and that expert, and, well, no one knows for sure, blah, blah, blah. I knew for sure. I'm sure you knew for sure. And Wilson and all, and that prosecutor knew for sure that there would be no indictment. But how do we make this look like we're really trying? Okay, we'll let them go on and on. We'll present them with all the evidence and all that stuff, knowing that there is never going to be an indictment. Then we call up the National Guard, and then we tell people that we did that, and every day, when's it going to happen? Finally, it's going to happen Monday, but we're not going to tell you till 9 o'clock at night, because now that we've built everybody into this frenzy, by 9 o'clock, they'll have a lot of time to go out and drink and all that stuff. Then at 9 o'clock, we're going to tell them that we're not going to do anything. And then when they start rioting and burning down things, we're not going to get the National Guard to stop them. You know, they stayed outside and let all that happen.
This whole thing.
So now we have just proved that these people aren't nothing but a bunch of ignorant savages, and we have to have the right to kill them every now and then. That's exactly the case that they laid out. And,
yeah,
I mean, it's absolutely disgusting.
And you're absolutely right, because the whole thing was staged. The only thing it lacked was when the verdict was announced for the prosecuting attorney, Robert McCulloch, to hold up that whiteboard or whatever it is they use in front of a camera when they're making movies and go, action.
Yeah, exactly. And did you watch that press conference?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen a few closing arguments in my time, and that's what that was. I mean, when he sat there and just derided the witness testimony of everybody except his preferred witnesses, and now we're finding out things like. The medical examiner didn't take pictures of the body because he claims his camera battery was dead?
Exactly.
That's some medical examiner.
Anybody that believes all of that, the whole thing was staged. The governor, the prosecutor, and this guy, this Wilson guy, I mean, you know, wow, those serious injuries. I mean, he's got a red mark on the side of his face or something. How the hell, I don't know, maybe he did that shaving in the morning.
Well, I don't think we're telling tales out of school, Wayne. You've probably been in a couple of fisticuffs in your existence, right? I mean, you know.
Oh, I have, and you know, see, well, and I have, I've dealt with police officers before, and you know. I've been in trouble before and even been in jail, you know. I never killed anybody or nothing. I wasn't a mean guy, but, you know, I'm not real good at following the rules.
But if you take a punch to the face, you know, and the way Darren Wilson described it,
oh, exactly.
You know, the demon Hulk Hogan giant scary black man balled up his fist and reached all the way down into Arkansas. And laid a good one on him, and all it did was make his cheeks a little pinkish.
Yeah.
I mean, my cheeks get pinker than that walking to the car in these temperatures.
That's exactly right. That you know, the whole story is fabricated. The whole, I don't believe a damn word that guy says. I mean, he's known to, you know, have racist ties with the Klan, and, you know, Anonymous is on the case with the Klan thing. Have you been reading any of that?
Right. And here's the next question. What does it take to get the for-profit media to at least make public the actual journalism that Anonymous has been doing?
That's a good question. That's a real good question. But it's, I don't know.
But you're right, because it is, it's inspiring to see the numbers of people. I'm seeing here, there were protests in 37 states, Wayne.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's an awakening. Look at how many people were at the, I forget exactly what it was called in New York City, the Environmental March.
Oh, the People's Climate March.
People's Climate March. I mean, that was amazing. And, you know, a total surprise to a lot of people that many people showed up. I mean, I thought there'd be a lot of people, but I didn't expect that many. So, you know, that's why you can't give up on that. I mean, I think, like with the young people are just amazing. You know, young people don't have prejudices. They don't care. They don't see color. They don't give a damn if you're gay, straight, be whatever you want to be. I mean, I think that gives us great hope. It gives me great hope to see that.
Right, but But to turn it back to what you were saying about politics at the beginning of our conversation, one thing that matters is we have to give them something to vote for. We have to give them politicians worth voting for.
Democrats lost because they stopped being Democrats. That's why they lost. You know, Howard Dean, I think Howard Dean said it best. After the election, number one, he said, you can't win when you're afraid. You can't win. And that's absolutely true. Then, what was the Republicans' message? The Republicans' message was, we're not Obama. And there's no substance to that. But what was the Democrats' message?
We're not Obama either.
Yeah, we're not either. I mean, Jesus Christ. The race is here. Natalie Tennant, you know, I mean, it was like, you know, who could kiss the coal company's ass the most?
And that's the, you know, you talk about young people don't care about race. Young people don't care about the gay, straight, whatever. You know what young people do care about, Wayne?
The environment.
They care about being able to breathe air and drink water when they're our ages.
Yes, they do.
They are thinking out front a little bit, and they care about that. So let's take your average 18-year-old first-time voter in the state of West Virginia, whose first sight of a ballot was the ballot on the November in the November election in West Virginia. What was on there for them? Whether or not the Boy Scouts should be able to profiteer without paying taxes?
And nobody knew what that thing was about to begin with, which I voted no on, and so did, well, the only county that it failed is the county that the damn Boy Scouts are in. Now, that ought to tell you something.
Well, I mean, and
those,
you know,
people deal with them. They know what, well, you know, I had dealings with the Boy Scouts, so I'm not real happy with them to begin with.
Right. But not exactly labor-friendly, are they?
No. I mean, you know, they made us all kinds of promises, and, you know, we were going to have an opportunity to do all this work on their 10,500 acres, and, you know.
Yeah, how many good union jobs came out of that?
Not very many. We got maybe 3% of the workforce, you know.
Well,
and, you know, because that way we said, oh, there was union people up there.
Yeah.
We tried to deal with them, but they're just unreasonable.
Well, I mean, you've watched Ferg grow up.
Yeah.
And this was his first election. and I try to be a good civically minded dad, so we sat down with a sample ballot. Now, I didn't tell him which way to vote. But, you know, we talked about candidates and we talked about issues, and that's exactly what he said to me, Wayne. He said, there's no candidate on here I care about. There's no candidate on here who speaks to things that matter to me. And you know what? I'm not going to fault him for that because he was right.
Yeah, he is right.
And it's not, and this is not a problem that is unique to West Virginia. There were lots of places in this country where there was nobody to vote for. And by the way, speaking of not voting, I saw a number that Carol Baker put in the chat room a few minutes ago. We actually have the numbers now. The number of people who did not vote in the United States is upwards of 87 million American citizens eligible to vote. Didn't. Yeah, doesn't that just knock you backwards a little bit?
Yeah, it does. I don't understand it. We got to give them something to vote for. We have to start being Democrats again. If you want people on your side, you have to be on their side. It's just that simple. You can't be afraid to speak up for people or what is right. And, you know, the Democratic Party should be out here leading the fight at Walmart for 15 and full time. That's Walmart's thing. The fast food workers, their fight for $15 an hour. And where the administration came up with $10.10, I don't have the slightest idea, but I think what we need, a $15 an hour minimum wage tied to inflation, and it never has to be addressed again. Inflation goes up 2%, the minimum wage goes up 2%. That's what has to happen. And they do it in other countries. We could do it here.
Yeah, I saw one statistic adjusted for the differences in currency valuations. A McDonald's worker in Australia makes $15 an hour and change. A Big Mac in Australia costs, $4.20. A McDonald's employee in the United States of America makes, $8-9 an hour.
Yeah.
A Big Mac in the United States of America costs $4.20. You know what? Somebody being able to feed their children is worth 7 cents on a burger to me.
Did you know, when they did the last big thing on the Flight for 15?
Yeah.
It was a couple months ago. They had people here from Denmark that make $21 an hour at McDonald's. And a burger Big Mac is relatively the same price. Might be a little bit more, but, it's not twice or three times as more. It's a few cents more if it's more at all. My buddy Luke, his wife's daughter's in the Air Force in Minot, North Dakota. Is it North Dakota or South Dakota?
North.
North. And, they got the big oil shell boom and all that going on. I mean, they can't get enough people for the jobs there are. A McDonald's worker in North Dakota makes $15 an hour. And Luke tells me that a Big Mac is the same damn price as it is down in Beaver. So it can be done. They can do it.
And apparently there's no horrifying risk to the economy, Wayne, because where is the Dow?
Almost 18,000.
I mean, at 18,000, it's almost up out of the oxygen, isn't it?
Oh, my God. I mean, it scares the hell out of me because I worry about it. It's like they're crazier now than they were before the 2008.
Well, you and I were talking about it. It's like we're looking at people who are drunk and don't know how to put down the bottle.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I don't know if it's... I would love to see us be able to do things right in this country, and we can do things right. And there's, you know, we have all these problems. We, you know, you got your Fergusons, you got all, you know, poverty and under education and underemployment, and I mean, just problem after problem, drug abuse, and the secret to all of that. And, you know, it's not complicated or anything. It's put people to work. Put people to work making a living wage with benefit. Everybody gets insurance. Everybody gets insurance. And I mean dental insurance, too.
Yeah, dental, vision.
Whatever the hell you need.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you need something, everybody gets insurance. If somebody's willing to work for a living, they deserve a living wage, they deserve health insurance, and they deserve to be able to retire with dignity. And we could do that. We could do that for all people. And there are a certain amount of people that have to be taken care of or refuse to contribute. And, you know, we could take care of them people, too. If you want to be a junk and a mooch off the government, okay. You know, whatever you are, 6%, 8%, I'm willing to take care of you, too. We could take care of, everybody could live good, and the rich people could still be rich. They could still be fucking rich.
You're right.
And why do they have to have it all? You know, that's not going to work. I mean... It hasn't worked before. You know, that's where, you know, guillotines and all, I mean, you know, eventually you're going to get put the people in a position where they don't have anything left to lose.
Well,
when you put people in that position, you're going to be in trouble.
Right.
You're going to be
in trouble. And, you know, something has occurred to me in the context of what's taking place in Ferguson and the killing of Michael Brown. Because, you know, Dr. Bill and I, we're big, really bad history nerds. Do you know what is widely credited with being the spark that led to the eventual blaze that was the American Revolution? It was the shooting of a young black man named Crispus Attucks in Boston, Massachusetts, by uniformed law enforcement, you know, the Redcoats, the British Army, but they were serving as law enforcement. And so, lo and behold, here, a couple of centuries later, you've got another unarmed young black man who is gunned down in cold blood by law enforcement. And you've got the beginning of and you've got something that resembles the same civil unrest. So every time these right-wingers say, oh, this is incomprehensible, how could this possibly be taking place? Yeah. Well, you know, they only say that because they ignore history altogether, Wayne.
I mean, history's very inconvenient.
To them?
History could prove you to be the prick that you are. That's very dangerous.
Oh, I think we've got tonight's toaster, Wayne.
History
can prove you to be the prick that you are.
Right.
That's Sparky's cowbell. We use that for that. that's a beautiful thing. I mean, I might have to take that to the tattoo parlor.
Oh well, you know, go for it. You know, I'm a generous guy. I don't give a shit.
Oh yeah, it's like Carol Baker says. You know, I'm a giver.
Right. There you go.
And speaking of Carol Baker, here's a lovely statistic for you to ponder. Over the spring and summer, the economy grew faster than it has since 2003. Dear God, is there no end to the living hell of the Obama era?
I know. I mean, you know, like this guy is, you know, I love the dude, man. And, you know, which doesn't mean that, you know, he doesn't piss me off at least a few times every day. But, people bitch me about Obama. I just tell them, you know, yeah, I know. I wish McCain and fucking Palin was in there. Right. You know, we'd be so much better off.
John sitting in the, you know, the President General John sitting in the Oval Office screaming at the clouds he's had painted on the ceiling.
Yeah, you know, do people realize that this is the dude that, you know, like a year or so ago, I don't know, a year and a half ago, was telling everybody that we have to arm ISIS to defeat Assad. And now this month is we have to arm Assad to defeat ISIS.
Well, and you know what? I think maybe he should run in 2016, Wayne. His campaign slogan should be, McCain, for God's sakes, let's give guns to somebody.
Somebody. Anybody.
Exactly. And remember, with the McCain administration, we probably would have had Defense Secretary Lindsey Graham.
Oh, isn't he a piece of work?
You know,
what an ass.
I mean,
you don't believe the latest Benghazi.
Yeah, now he's mad at the House of Representatives.
Yeah, right. They don't know what that, and that's what, the 18th investigation that came up with the same conclusion? There's been quite a few of them. I don't know exactly how many, but there's been quite a few.
But Lindsey Graham isn't going to tolerate it, or else he may very well pass out upon his fainting couch. Oh, John, Rhett,
yes.
Whatever.
How old is he?
I don't know. I wonder if he's got the stamina to deal with all those men's only clubs that are going to do so well in a Graham White House. You ran across that one too, right?
No. Yes. Yes.
I mean, that one stopped me in my tracks. I mean, ice cold for
about
30 minutes.
Well, he likes men's only, you know.
Yeah.
He likes men's only.
By the way, you just got a note in from our buddy Michael in Madison. He said, I feel as though Wayne just echoed my operating political philosophy word for word as if plucked from my own brain. Uncanny. And then a matter of 2 minutes late, 1 minute later, he wrote again and said, and now I have a brand new operating historical philosophy. Awesome. You know,
what's
history,
that? History you can prove you to be the prick that you are.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, we may have to come up with a crest for the horn with, you know, all the curlicues and a unicorn on the top, and it just says in Latin underneath, history may prove you to be the prick that you are.
Yeah, well, I'll let you translate that into Latin, buddy. man.
Oh.
And then what's with Harry Reid? Is he smoking crack or some shit? Some of these dudes got to leave. Well, there's more Chicken Little shit, I guess. I don't know.
Well, Harry being Harry, I think somebody just slipped him some caffeine.
I mean, you see this deal he was going to sign or pushing for, the $44 billion tax cut?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, well, Obama threatened it. Well, told him he's going to veto it.
Speaking of senators, did you catch this thing? And granted, it's a pretty low bar, I admit. But did you catch this latest statement from Chuck Schumer?
How about we should have waited for the Health Care Act?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I wandered into my local not a doctor's office to pick up my prescription refills, and of course Fox News was on in there. This is of course the same clinic I go to that has the Ask Obama Death Panel cartoon in every examining room. I kid you not. But Fox was on.
It's not good to get in political stuff in a doctor's office.
No, I've said it in other doctor's offices. Look, put it on the Weather Channel. Put it on the Home Shopping Network. I don't care.
Right.
But you know.
When I go to my doctor's office, they give me the remote because I change it.
You know what? And they do that because you're you.
Yeah, well, but you got to be careful.
Well, I just look at them and say, you know, do you not have people who come in here with heart conditions? Do you not have people who come in here with panic disorder? You really want to sit them down and let them be terrorized by a news channel? Because I try to make sure that they understand that I'm not talking about Fox. If it was MSNBC, I'd say the same thing. Yeah, put on cartoons.
But do you remember that story? Remember when I went and had cataracts? When I went and had surgery for cataracts?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I went, that's during the McGraw campaign.
Right.
McGraw-Benjamin campaign for the Supreme Court. And, you know, Daryl McGraw was a friend of working people, still is, but he was one of the best Supreme Court justices we had.
Yeah. And Daryl, as it turns out, we've learned to our dismay, was a real attorney general.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I went and we go in there. Gina takes me into there. They're going to do one eye. And there's these anti-McGraw posters in the doctor's office supporting his opponent. And so they came and got me and took me in, and I told them, I said, don't put me to sleep till the doctor comes in. So the doctor comes in, and I said, I come here to get my eyes fixed. I didn't come here for political propaganda. I said, you got this, you know, stuff all over the waiting room and stuff. I said, that's bullshit. I got to come down. And he said, well, I can't. The guy that, I don't own this building. I just rent it. I said, well, call him up and tell him if he doesn't take that down, you're not going to rent here anymore. I said, you know, that's baloney. So I come out, and my wife said, oh, that's real smart. I heard you all the way out here. A guy's about ready to stick a knife in your eye, and you're yelling at him over political stuff. I said, well, you know, I never thought of that. But anyway, a couple weeks later, I go back to do the other eye. Do the other eye, get done. Well, they put lenses in, and, you know, you can, well, they can make it 20/20. They can do whatever they want. And he told me, he says, I can make you 20/20, but you'll need glasses to read. And I said, well, look, man, I've been wearing glasses all my life. And I said, I take my glasses off to read. Let's just leave it like that. And he said, okay. So anyway, when I got done, I went, I had to get glasses. And doctors examining for my prescription, he said, oh, you had the cataracts done, huh? And I said, yeah. And he said, boy, he did a lot better job on this side. Than he did the other one. I said, oh, yeah, well, there's a story behind that.
There's a reason.
So, you know, you got to be careful in doctor's offices about voicing your opinion. They have a lot of power over you. Ah, oh, boy.
Yeah, that. What's the lesson out of that? Never stress out a man with a knife in his hand.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when he's standing over you with a knife, and they're about to put you to sleep. Well,
yeah, and I get to go for my consult over my neck that feels like it's got a bunch of gravel in it on December the 3rd. I cannot tell you. How I'm not looking forward to that.
Because no, I wouldn't be either.
I've had advice offered to me by several people. One of whom is an MD, who said, "Listen, neurosurgeons are always really antsy. You know, they're always really excited to have somebody new to cut on. So get a second opinion, maybe a third. I don't know. Maybe it's time for me to see the lovely wonders of the North Country of Minnesota and the area around Rochester and take a little trip up to the Mayo Clinic.
That might not be a bad idea. When do you go for the, what is it, consultation or something?
Yeah, the consult with the neurosurgeon is December the 3rd. So that's Wednesday of next, that's a week from today.
Well. I mean, they're not going to do anything. They're just going to tell you what they think they should do.
Right. I have to take the MRI to him, and he'll look at the MRI and say, and probably tell me.
You definitely got a cut.
Well, yeah, he's just going to look at it and say, there's no hope for you. We have to amputate.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, I hope it comes out a little bit better than that.
Well, me too. I mean, I enjoy having it may not be a good head on my shoulders, but it's the only one I've got.
Right. They're very vital things. for a living.
I'm attached to it.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, God. But you know, we have talked a lot about, over the years, about how, you know, and you and I were at one of them. Remember our trip long ago to Washington, D.C., and our joyful trip to Stan's down there in the basement?
Yeah.
We were at a protest in D.C., and you know, as soon as the protest was over, everybody folded up their tents and left. Well, the one thing about something that's spontaneous and not orchestrated, something like what we're seeing arising out of Ferguson, is people don't go away. And those things have a way of changing the culture.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. It's, well, you know, we've all seen it and everything. You know, if you've seen the sign, just the 99% voted, we wouldn't have to worry about the 1%.
Right.
That's the matter is, there's a lot of truth to that.
Oh, I got something for you here. This just came from our buddy Jay Cruzen, who is, of course, a proud union member. And he's answering your question about where did the idea of a $10.10 per hour minimum wage come from? You're not going to need to sit down. You're not going to be surprised by this because you live in the world. But Jay Cruzen says, at $10.10 an hour, a full-time minimum wage worker would no longer be eligible for government assistance. You know, food stamps, Section 8 housing, Medicaid, and so forth. You'd think the Republicans would love it, and the Democrats would be pissed. This is where we live, Bob, and these fake Democrats can't figure out why we don't show up and vote for them?
That's very interesting.
So $10.10 an hour is the bare minimum you need to make sure that nobody can get that ridiculously luxurious dollar a day food stamp allotment. America.
Democrats gotta get their shit together. I mean, we know who else. We need real Democrats. We gotta stop being afraid.
Yeah, but see, you and me, Wayne, and the Horn Family Commune congregation, we're what they like to call radicals, or as you described it shortly after the election, more militant than ever. Because we ask questions that turn the issues on their ears. I mean, like, for instance, being 51 years old, soon to be 52, I'm part of that generation that has already been screwed out of two more years of Social Security. So, you know, there's no 65-year-old Social Security for me.
No. You're 67, right?
Right. And you know, because everybody lives longer in America, if the Republicans can have their way, I won't be able to collect it until I'm 116.
Exactly.
But
there won't be anything left because they already privatized it and it got lost in the slot market.
Right.
Now the brokers and the brokers' houses, they all made money. God, billions, trillions, but your money's gone.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but on the other, but you know, let's turn the box all the way around and look at it from the other side. We've got all these undocumented immigrants in America who aren't paying into the system. What if we let them pay into the system? And what if we lower the Social Security retirement age to 58. How about all those
college
kids that can't get a job and are buried in student debt? You think maybe being able to have a decent job might bring them to the polls?
Issues like that would, I think, you know, we have failed terribly, I guess, at educating our people. And, you know, that, I mean,
it depends on how you define failure. I was graduating high school as St. Ronnie was entering the White House. And the level of civic knowledge of the kids who graduated high school immediately after me, who are now 40-somethings, just fell off a cliff. President? What's a president? So they were very successful in educating people. It's just what we educate them on.
I know. I read a thing somewhere. The majority of people can't tell you who the vice president is.
No, but did you see that? Because we ran the audio from it a week or so ago. The audio from Texas Tech University, where students at Texas Tech couldn't even tell who won the revolution, when the revolution was, who won the Civil War, but to a person everybody knew who J-Lo was married to and who Kim Kardashian was and who Jennifer Aniston is. I mean, it's not a matter of being unable to learn. It's a matter of what we make it possible for people to learn. And you know what? A bunch of plutocrats and oligarchs who just want to run things and steal everything that isn't nailed down.
They don't want informed, smart people.
No, they want them informed. They just want them to be informed as to whom Kim Kardashian is having sex with.
Right.
Because it doesn't threaten their power base. It doesn't threaten their money.
I don't know. One time I feel like I got hope, and then you get, people don't know who the vice president is and all that jazz, and then you wonder if there is any hope sometimes. But got to keep fighting, man. Got to keep fighting. We got to, this can be changed. It has to change. It's going to change eventually, but I don't want it to have to require bloodshed and all that stuff. It'd be nice if we could do this peacefully. But.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, change will come, but when it comes in the form of catastrophic collapse, you've got to, you knew people who knew what the Depression was.
Yes, I did. And that's what, now you think about it. I mean, that's how unions started. That's how all this stuff started, is because the people in charge, the industrialists, the right wing, the whatever you want to call them, put people in a position where they didn't have anything left to lose. And when you don't have any,
What did you say once about how you were trying to work yourself out of a job?
Exactly. That would be the goal.
If every employer was treating every worker fairly, paying a decent wage, not trying to shirk workers' compensation, doing everything they're supposed to do, keeping a safe workplace, There'd be
no need for unions.
Yeah, Wayne would be drawing unemployment.
Exactly. Again, there have been employers like that. I mean, that guy years ago, New Hampshire or something, Olson Mills, something like that. He had 900, 1,200 employees or something, and they made fabric and things. Anyway, the factory burned down. And, the next day and all the smoldering stuff, the owner of the business just had all his employees there and told them, you don't have to worry about anything. Your checks are going to keep coming. Your insurance is going to be paid. I need you to help rebuild this place. And I got to tell it, our younger guys organized and stuff. I said, go try and start a union there. They'll throw you out. They don't, if people are willing to treat people with dignity and treat them right, then there's no need for guys like us. But unfortunately, I'm afraid we're going to be needed for a long time.
Well, yeah, and even growing up in Alabama, I still remember a time when union households made up entire neighborhoods, and there were community, and the communities were just vibrant as hell, Wayne.
Yes.
I mean, businesses sprung up around the fact that union families were spending money because they had Because, you know, being middle class means among other things, that, okay, yeah, you might sock away a little bit in the Christmas club, right? But you're out there and you're buying stoves and cars and refrigerators, and you're getting the gutters redone and putting on a new roof before you even need it.
And what's that do? That creates more jobs.
And you're driving the economy.
Exactly.
You know, I don't care.
I don't know who's the FDR. And, you know, that's what amazes me about, you know, because this is the, you know, these Republican so-called business people. Well, you know, how hard is it to understand? And I think FDR, I don't know, was it FDR that said the best consumer is a well-paid worker? You know, Henry Ford knew that if he wanted to pay his people enough so they could afford to buy the product that they were making. That, you know, that seems pretty basic, and I don't know why these people don't understand that. But, you know, if everybody prospers, they prosper more.
And, exactly. Exactly. By the way, you had a note coming in from Devin, who is up in northern area of the state, up in the radio quiet zone, and he just said, thank you, Wayne, for everything you do.
Oh, well, thank you. And who is this?
This is Devin.
Okay. What are you looking at? The board?
The chat room.
Okay.
See, we got a whole bunch of people in the chat room.
How do I...
Head on radionetwork.com, and then you just click chat room, and...
Yeah, I mean, that's how I got here to begin with, so...
Yeah.
Let me see. Well, I'm sitting in the office.
Oh! So. Is it snowing there?
I don't know. I can't see outside. It wasn't when I came in.
We're smoking our turkey this year, you know, the problem with smoking a turkey, Wayne, is you've got to use a jumper cable for a roach clip. But, The problem with smoking a turkey is you got to use a jumper cable for a jumper cable clip for a roach clip.
Make sure the other end's not hooked to the battery.
Well, exactly. Well, no, that's how you light the turkey. But we're smoking our turkey for tomorrow, and it was just beginning to sort of, you know, that really fine, needly, ice-cold rain, kind of shitty and hateful. That had just started up right about airtime, and, you know, I woke up this morning and saw snow, and it just, you know, power swore for a little bit.
I don't know. I wonder what's happening in Virginia, because... Nick and Anna and Revan are supposed to come over tomorrow.
I know over toward the eastern side, they were getting it and getting more as of this morning. I had friends contacting me from the eastern panhandle saying they were getting kind of hit.
Okay.
Over in the high mountain areas. You might want to check in on them. But, the other day when those high winds blew through, did the wind manage to blow down your coal-fired electricity? Because I know Dr. Bill was out for a few hours.
No, ours stayed.
He was out for about 18 hours. Right there in the middle of
I haven't seen lately. Him for a while.
He's certainly been on a tear on the horn. You know, to sit down and listen to Dr. Bill explain American history. We've got a going sort of saying around here now that, you know, he'll do 2 hours of beautiful, informative radio, and then, like, in the last 3 minutes of the program, he whips out an axe handle and just whacks you in the back of the head, and you go, oh! Yesterday was the inherent contradiction between republicanism and capitalism. And I just, what? And I think he's going to be going off in that direction and it's going to be mind-blowing.
Well, I'm going to have to start listening to that.
It's a lot of fun. And, you know,
he's on, you know, during the day.
Right, it makes it a little difficult.
What, 1 to 3 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, now that you can put the TuneIn Radio app on your phone, you know, it's there in the car with you, in the truck.
Well, I'm going to have to do that then. Going to have to do that.
Well, I tell you what, I know, like I said before, there's a whole bunch of people who've never heard from you before, because we had this big spike in new members of the Horn Family Commune congregation, and I know that they're tickled to have heard from you. And I'm sorry I filibustered so long while you were sitting. Well, you've been in the studio. The phone line you're on is completely out of my sight, so I kind of get lost in my own little world, and I apologize.
Oh, okay. Is the other one closer to you? Or
yeah, the gizmo line is right in front of me.
Okay.
Yeah, the 663-4676, 663 horn number. Isn't that cool? 4676 spells horn.
Okay. Well, that's the one I'll call.
Okay.
I won't, you know, I will call more often. Well, there's a lot of things coming up. There's a lot to talk about. And, you know, being a liberal and everything like that, I got to belong to the Democratic Party. That's the only one I've ever known all my life. And I know it ain't perfect, but I told you before, I'm too damn old for a third party, so I got to try to fix the one that I belong to.
Well, right. And I don't know about other people's third parties in other parts of the country, but I know our third party here in West Virginia, at least from a progressive standpoint, might win an election, in the year 2932.
Yeah. And I probably won't be here then.
Yeah, I'd like to think I will, but I'm not betting on it. The numbers out of the last election showed that their brand has become toxic. I mean,
who is now?
The Mountain Party.
Yeah.
Ed Rabel, who ran a great independent campaign in the second district, he got more votes in a single congressional district than a guy who ran a Mountain Party campaign for Senate all around the entire state. I mean, people are staying away from the Mountain Party in droves.
And why is that? Why? I mean.
I think there's a credible.
I mean, they don't run. They want to go for the top right away.
This time through, you know, they ran some people for county commission and things like that, and that's where it has to begin. Not running vanity candidacies for governor and Senate and congressman and stuff, but you have to run in statewide elections to garner enough votes to remain a recognized political party. You know, that's part of the way the game's rigged.
Right.
But, you know, for instance, when Charlotte Pritz said in March that no one would run in the Senate race, and it would be basically, you know, as far as the Democratic or the so-called left was concerned, it would be Natalie Tennant versus, you know, Shelley Moore Capito, and then the weirdos that ran against, you know, from the right. And then in July, when Bob Henry Baber came out and said, nope, I'm going to run as a Mountain Party candidate for Senate, you know, that had a profound impact on their credibility as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, I would say so.
And that's, you know, that's not to say that I didn't share a lot philosophically with Bob Henry Baber. But, you know, that goes back to that problem we were talking about having Democrats who actually have Democratic values. You know, I welcome the chance, if we have it in this state, Wayne, to drain the swamp. You know, that...
Oh, exactly.
That mugwump Hall went over to the Republicans? Good. Go be what you are. If Earl Ray Tomlin...
And remember, a lot of these so-called Democrats were Republicans before until they figured out that if they want to get elected, they had to call themselves Democrats.
Yeah, because the state was a one-party state for a very long time.
Yeah, for a very long time. And now... that the other side has won, these people are going to come out for what they really were or are. Daniel Hall proved that immediately almost.
Yeah, and you know, go with God. Go be who you are.
Yeah.
And frankly, if it, you know, if and I don't want you to get in any heat, but you know, if Joe Manchin stepped up to the microphones tomorrow and said, you know, I finally decide, I'm coming out of the closet, I'm a Republican, I think a whole bunch of people in the state would go, well, yeah, you are. I mean, it'd be like if Lindsey Graham stepped to the microphone and said, I am gay. You know, the nation would go, yes, of course you are. We've known all along. If Joe Manchin said, I'm a Republican, the nation would go, yes, of course you are. We've known all along. And you know, that's okay. You know, because as a progressive liberal Democrat, you know what? I'm tolerant. And I'm okay. You know, I'm okay with people being who they are. But, you know... you know, is there any way to rebuild the Democratic base with more people who are going to run saying, I sure do hate that Obama? I think I lost Wayne. Darn it. Let's try this again. Is that you, man?
Yeah, I lost
you. Yeah, I lost you, too. I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened.
But no, all I was saying is, you know, let people be who they are.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I did. If you really truly believe something, I can respect that. I don't have to agree with it, but I can respect that. But don't come tell me you're something else. All right, that's bullshit. Be who you are.
Yeah, I mean,
and then we'll work from there.
We've got an attorney general now, and I'm a firm believer in take it personally. We've got an attorney general now who is working every day of his existence to try to make sure I can't go to that doctor who's going to tell me if my neck's all screwed up. We got an attorney general who's trying to take away health care from more than 100,000 citizens of the state of West Virginia.
I know. And you know, and people are like, they knew he was a carpetbagger. Everybody knew he was a carpetbagger. And then, you know, we did the same thing again this year in the second district. What's that guy's name?
Mooney?
Yeah.
Yeah. And again,
same,
you know,
thing all over again. I mean, Casey wasn't my favorite person either, but I mean, well, at least he's lived here all his life.
Yeah. And you know, God love him, if he had run a campaign that would have thrown any kind of a sop to thousands of progressives, because there are actually, I mean, you know it, there's thousands of people in this little tiny state who are actually real, live, honest to goodness, bona fide liberals.
Yeah, they are.
And if Casey had thrown any kind of a sop, saying, you know, if he had just said, you know, I don't hate women, or I don't think fetuses have more rights than living women do, that might have been. Yeah, but you know, and of course you know what I went through with Natalie Tennant, you know, begging her just to acknowledge the existence of a science report, and she couldn't even do that.
No.
It's frustrating.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's drain the swamp and let's find some people who want to be Democrats.
That sounds good to me.
Well, I tell you what, seriously, people enjoyed hearing from you, and they will enjoy hearing from you more. So don't be a stranger, okay?
Well, I will do that.
All right.
I will not be a stranger.
And I hope everybody gets over your way okay, and there's no
I'm going to talk to them in the morning. Don't try it, man. Don't get out there if it's too damn bad.
Right.
No.
And
we could pretend like it's Thanksgiving next week, too.
Exactly.
They sell turkeys year-round, you know.
Oh, yeah, they do. Exactly that. Man, I went to get ours. And tell me this isn't backwards. A turkey that's already thawed out was $42. A turkey, the same brand turkey, everything, that was hard as a rock was $17. Now, wouldn't you think you'd want to move the already thawed out turkey faster than the frozen one?
Okay, how do you know it was already that? You sure it wasn't just a fresh turkey?
Well, I mean, but he went in the back to the meat section and brought me a fresh turkey that same wrapping, yep, same everything.
Okay.
I felt like I'd
been, I don't know.
Yeah. Because, well, I mean, I can't do no $42 turkeys.
No, I don't know how much mine cost, but it didn't cost $42. I don't remember that.
Right, exactly. So,
I remember that.
So we decided, since we're putting it on the smoker anyway, that we'd get one that was about halfway frozen and just let it warm up inside the gentle, low, slow heat of a 225-degree meat smoker, while having hickory smoke poured over it, and there's layers of bacon laying over the breast and everything to keep it nice and moist. And I have a feeling it's going to be really yummy.
Yeah, it sounds good.
I mean, you know, well, bacon. I could eat a brick. I could eat a cinder block if it had bacon on it.
Oh, I bet you could. So could I, but I don't know how much longer I'd live after that.
Oh, yeah, and you've been very, very good about modifying your diet, and I'm proud of you.
Yeah. I mean, that's, well, you know, you was wrong. I shouldn't be here, man. So, you know, I'm not afraid of nothing. What the hell am I? I ain't afraid of nothing. I'm going to give a damn. I shouldn't be here to begin with. So, and now I'm going on 2 years.
And your doctor is not pronouncing preachments of doom and gloom at you.
No, he isn't. He's happy with the way everything's going, as am I.
So, you know, keep having your beans and your salad, man. Let's do it. I haven't seen you looking better in ages. You're looking awesome.
Well, I feel pretty good.
Well, cool. I'll tell you what.
We got to, you know, there's certainly enough to keep one going, because there's more fights than you could shake a stick at. And, you know, we're going to face it here. I mean, they are going to try to eliminate the prevailing wage, and we have a chance to stop that. We really do. You know, and we stop it in the Senate. I mean, they gained so many seats in the House, we can't stop anything there. But, you know, the Senate, it's, well, 1816. And, you know, we could convince a couple, three of those people to vote with us.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Well, and, you know, there's a lot of non-union.
Well, we're going to try like hell.
And there's a lot of non-union workers out there that have the benefit of prevailing wage that might not like to start working for $12 an hour.
Well, that's, yeah, the non-union guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. See, and that's what people aren't thinking about. And that's what the people that are proposing eliminating prevailing wage aren't thinking about either. They think, and this is that Senator Bill Cole that the car said, him and Darrell Issa are probably related or something. When he sees prevailing wage, the next word he sees is union. He doesn't have the slightest idea how many thousands of construction workers that work on prevailing wage jobs that aren't union. And in fact, they avoid us. They won't come and join. I mean, a lot of these guys are good craftsmen. They know their stuff.
But, yeah.
And they won't join us because, you know, just a round number, $40 for a carpenter. Well, a union carpenter gets $25 in his check, $7.50 goes to health insurance. Well, these guys work non-union. They don't want their things deducted. Their old lady got health insurance, and they don't need pension right now, so they get that $40 on their paycheck.
Right.
So they ain't going to join us. Well, now there's a very serious chance of that $40 an hour becoming $15 an hour, period. No benefits. And that's going to be for the top men. The other guys, you know, 12 or 13 will be fine for them. We need to get a hold of them people and get, and those people call up the senators that took over the Senate and Bill Coles of the world and say, wait a minute, man. Because a lot of these guys voted for them Republicans. You know, because Republicans don't kill babies and Republicans.
And don't want no homosexual merge.
Yeah, and they won't let them damn gays get married. Stuff like that and give them rights that other people ain't got and all, you know.
That's the part thing. I don't understand. Everybody's got the right to get gay married if they want to.
Exactly.
Just nobody has to.
Nobody has to. And anyway, those guys voted for these guys. And we got to get them guys to call up these senators and say, wait a minute, pal, I voted to put your ass in there, but I didn't vote for this. And I think that'll carry a lot of weight. I really think we could stop this. So we're going to try like hell. That's for sure. And then the next thing is right to work. And, you know, that's going to be, well, they tell me that they don't want to introduce that because that's too radical for right now. Because Bill Cole wants to be senator or be governor.
Right.
And, you know, he doesn't want to scare people too much. Once he's governor, then he'll do right to work. He won't care. But anyway, we're going to see. It's going to be a...
The legislative session starts in West Virginia when?
January 14th.
Katie, bar the door. It may be hell among the yearlings, Wayne. Yeah. Sparky asked me to tell you, he said, tell Wayne we had that prevailing wage fight in 1996 here in California with Pete Wilson. And they won that fight.
And they kept the prevailing wage, did they not?
Yeah. Because they reached out to people who weren't members of unions who were making good union money.
Exactly. I mean, you know, people got to realize, I mean, everybody's wages are higher because of unions. Just because you don't belong to a union doesn't mean you haven't benefited from unions. Unions have raised the wages of every damn worker in this country. That's a fact.
Yep.
That's a fact. And that's why we have to fight to get the minimum wage to $15 an hour, too. Because that's not, you know.
And I don't want to keep you on too much longer, because I know you got stuff to do, but. When is the last time that a Democrat in the Congress introduced not minimum, but living wage legislation? Because my memory is that the last time anybody talked about a living wage was the Nixon administration.
Yeah, well, no, we don't push for that. Or, you know, we haven't had any Democrats pushing for that. I mean, you know, they did a big thing last year. We passed... a 75-cent raise to minimum wage in 2015. So January 1st, whether Republicans like it or not, the minimum wage in West Virginia goes to $8 an hour. And then January 16, you know, and that's assuming that they don't do something with the law between then, there's another 75. In 16, it'll be $8.75. And, you know, all the Democrats were so proud of them that they, you know, like, well, they didn't want to be around me because I told them, we did big, you know, give me a break. 75 cents a year for 2 years in a row, and you guys are so proud of yourself, you don't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, don't spend it all in one place.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Anyway, boss, listen, I got to get off of here.
All right, you have a good evening. And if they travel, safe travels to them. And, just don't forget your spider-proof glove when you head to the mailbox.
Okay. I'll talk to you later.
All right, take it easy. Bye now.
All right, man, bye.
Oh, what a treat. The night before Thanksgiving and a good long confab with Boss Man Wayne. 19 minutes past the hour. On this 26th day of November 2014, and ever since well, right before the offertory hymn, Brother Asa took us down to $230 to go in fundraising for the evening. So with 41 minutes to go in the program, we have $230 to go to finish out the month of November. 23 folks at $10 a piece, 46 people at $5 a piece, 230 people at $1 a piece. Any way you want to slice it up is fine. We just want to keep the bills paid. So PayPal button, PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And you can also always use the traditional postal service address. Let's go back to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hang on just a minute. There you are.
Back to Gizmo line.
Hey, that's me.
Hey.
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Oh, man, that was a treat.
Yeah, it was.
See, that's what I would... I was kind of Democrat, I always was.
Exactly, and it's what we need a whole lot of millions of people more to be.
I recognize what was potentially real, and like I was getting stuff from the West Coast about what a creep Reagan was, and it was like Socialist Workers Party. I agree with those folks too, but they got about as much chance of getting elected president as Santa Claus has. I'm just kind of sold out against the Democratic Party anymore. It doesn't really exist. But the big thing is my health aide is a young woman, and what I was talking to her, she learned a lot about a lot of things. She never heard of the Edmund Fitzgerald until I told her about that little incident. She got on the phone, and her eyes just started going bigger. So that was terrible. I said, yep. So that kind of stuff happens a lot. You never hear it after a while. When it doesn't sell newspapers anymore, it's not important, you know. But this thing in Missouri is just, I think they let the folks run loose last night.
It's a little bit curious that with the National Guard at brigade strength in Ferguson, somehow or another, a whole bunch of buildings managed to burn.
And they want to show the world.
How
these people are.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what Wayne was getting at. It was staged. And frankly, there's the Ferguson police and the state police and whomever shooting essentially incendiary smoke devices and gas canisters, which can cause things to catch fire.
They want the folks to look like looters and thieves, because the church, and then the insurance companies, I'll bet you true to one, the insurance companies don't want to pay for all that stuff.
Oh no, that's an act of riot or insurrection.
Okay.
We don't pay.
Yeah, they got more gimmicks and gizmos on the insurance company. I think when I started to drive, if you weren't 27, liability was by itself, I don't know, maybe $750 a year. Just plain old minimum liability. No collision, no nothing. And that was when, how much $750 was worth in real money. Jesus, when I was 18, that was 1961. When a car, you could, like I'm telling my aide, I said, you could buy a nice Ford or a Chevy for $25,000 or $3,000, and she just looked at me like, is this man insane or what?
Yeah, new off the lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a house that was purchased in 1960 for the princely sum of $20,000.
Yep.
You know, it was brick, ranch style, three bedrooms, one bath, separate kitchen, living and dining room, great room together. And, well, I mean, you're hard-pressed if you walk onto a car lot now, Bill, to find a car that would cost less than my parents' home did.
Well, if I was still young enough, I'd be making the run down to, we used to come out at, in Georgia. What the hell city was that? Well, we used to hit a wholesaler down there and buy a Southern car with no rust, but something that was repairable. You know, you could, and we'd sell them, for God's sake. Winston-Salem was where we end up.
Oh, North Carolina.
Yep. Because they were pretty clean. Very little snow, and don't buy a car from the ocean side of the South, you know.
Right.
Because you're up against that kind of stuff, too. It's, yeah. But I had this thing last night was just, first of all, you're disgustingly angry and heartbroken about them not returning on the indictment on this guy. If he did it or not, let's go through court to find out.
There you go.
Not to have people, not to have his buddies and everybody else just cut him loose right away without any. How do you think the treasure friends are going to do anything?
Well, you know, it's
what?
Well, no. There's no answer for me anymore that isn't extremely cynical, Bill.
Yep. Well, of course, you know me. I'm Mr. Optimist. Yeah. Mr. Cheerful. Yes, right. If you believe that, Bob, I'll sell you a car.
Yeah. Mr. Stress of Sunnybrook Farm, right?
Yeah. Well, I've been cynical all my life. One of the reasons I walked out of school early and I went back and got my my GED test was I wanted out of the neighborhood I was living in because of the fighting. And, you know, the funny thing is, Bob, it wasn't racial fighting either. These were white guys I was fighting against. And they were just bully boys. And, of course, they had a reunion down there of the people, which I couldn't go to because I was working. But friends of mine went. And they said, Bill, you ought to see these tough guys and how they're struggling to survive, you know. And some of these guys are so phony, Bob, they would go out and rent a car for the night, you know, so they look real good. They'd arrive in an expensive car, but it was a rental. Oh, human nature in this country just defies description. But it was good to hear Boss Van Wayne because, well, basically what he's... Yep, he's a working man. There's no doubt about that. A skilled labor, carpentry, or what?
He's out of the carpenters union, but he's worked in the steel mills around Pittsburgh. He started out his working life shining the shoes of one young athlete in the Pittsburgh area. Last name was Ditka.
Oh, the first name was Mike, yes.
Yeah.
Well, there's a Woody Guthrie song about things that a gambling man is rich and the working man is poor. Man ain't got no home in this world anymore. I think that's the Woody Guthrie composition.
I think so,
I wish I could get a full permit.
No, I said I think so.
I want to get a full collection of his work, but... Anyway, I won't keep you, but I want to tell you to enjoy the holiday, and I don't know what I'm doing yet. Cause I'm getting kind of a point where I'm getting antisocial in my old age, I don't know. Well, I'm waiting for a new set of chops, too. So, I mean, I don't like to go out and have trouble eating stuff, you know? The thing about Dennis, well, I've got two good ones. Two female dentists that graduated from Case. When I walked in the office, the woman almost had her teeth fall off. She said, Bill, I spent so many nights listening to you. I said, yeah. And so I wish I had them back. I wish I could do it again, you know. Because I do miss it, Bob. That's the thing that's starting to get me is I miss playing. But I don't have the wherewithal anymore, my equipment. I got rid of my amplifiers and such. And so once in a while, you got to admit that, it's too tough a racket anymore. I don't need it. But anyway, you have a nice one.
I'm going to try. We've got our turkey in the smoker, and Ferg's becoming, he's learned at my side for a while, and he's becoming quite a good little cook, and he's working on some pies right now, I think. Pumpkin and sweet potato.
Oh, what would you say the difference is between those two? Because I've had both of them, and they're close.
For me, I like to taste a sweet potato better. And a while back, it was several years ago now, Lottie gave us a recipe for a sweet potato pie that had a little bit of brandy in it and cream. And it starts out with fresh sweet potatoes that have been steamed. You peel them and cube them and steam them, and then you mash them and put. Oh my goodness gracious!
Now I've got a pumpkin pie sitting here for tomorrow or the next 4 or 5 days. But what I've been enjoying is going out and buying a 6 or 12 pack of a dark German beer and putting one of those down every once in a while, because it's I guess you get the call of the homeland, the call of a German is beer. We can't exist without it. That was the thing about that, as we talked about that Tsingtao beer. When the Germans had a naval base on the shores of China, they, after everything else was built, they had to build a brewery because they're not going to live without that stuff. Anyway, I like to get a shortwave radio. Maybe when I get my number, my station is set up on a new computer, I can do that, because I had a shortwave radio, and it was interesting, because in the Yom Kippur War, I knew before the world did, through the BBC, that the Israelis had surrounded them, that Egyptian force that got across the canal.
Yeah.
Heinz Guderian himself couldn't have led a better armored counterattack. They had about 250,000 Egyptians bottled up. And that's when the Russians were real mad about it. And I woke up to a news report that the Strategic Air Command was flying. And that's the one that Sparky said, yeah, you heard that. Up until the time he told me, I said, was I hallucinating about this Strategic Air Command stuff?
Right.
I think the problem is that people talking about war in the Ukraine. Bob, have these people forgotten what nuclear missiles are? That's stupid.
No, I don't think they've forgotten anything. You just have to remember, there's always been a right wing contingent in this country that has kind of always had a big stiffy for nuclear war. Look all the way back to the Goldwater campaign.
Yeah.
If he got elected, we were gonna have us a nuclear conflagration.
Boy, that would have. Well, let's face it. The cost of living would have gone way down anyhow. My cynical look at things. Well, there's got to be a positive side to it. Cost of living will be very low at that point. Anyway, you take care of yourself.
All right, you be good, Bill. We'll talk soon.
Happy Thanksgiving. It's nice. You see, I don't have a family, but I did lower. My sister was a travel agent, and she went to Vienna 3 times. And we'd have dinner, and she'd say, Bill, I stepped off that plane and thought I was home. I said, yeah, because one-fourth of the clan, that provided your birth, the two families on each side, was from Vienna. And the rest, two of them were from Germany, and one was from, maybe Bohemia, which doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Anyhow, you take care of yourself.
All right, we'll see you, Bill. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. A tweet coming in this evening from Haley in Arkansas. Bob, quit it. Talking about bacon-covered smoked turkey breast just about done me in tonight. Oh, yeah, there's a little joy. Now, the downside is, the one thing I will not have tomorrow is the thing that I most love, and that is the 125, 130, 140-year-old dressing recipe. And I was serious what I said. I wasn't fooling around. Around here, the way I was raised, it was never, and I mean never, called stuffing. And the dish overall is turkey and dressing. Let's go back to the gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Anybody? A lot of hits on the gizmo line tonight. Let me square this away. All right. Gizmo line's open, 304-663-4676. Or the other line, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Either one gets you in with equal alacrity. Jump right in if you wish. It is about 24 minutes before the hour. And I want to send out thanks to Joyce and Gerald. Thanks to them, our fundraising goal has dropped to $170. In 24 minutes, if we can get 17 folks to pony up 10 bucks, or 10 people to pony up 17 bucks, or one person to pony up 170, we will finish up with fundraising. So there we go. Let's go back to the gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
Finally got my computer was down for about a week, and so I finally got it backed up.
Glory.
And, so I got some Bob listening I got to catch up on.
Cool. We've had some fun. It's been pretty zany from time to time.
Yeah, well, I caught it last night, but it was a replay.
No,
and that was good.
No,
last
night was live as live could be.
Yeah. Well, no. When I caught it.
I got it. Yeah.
And then.
Yeah, just don't confuse people and make them think I wasn't on the air. I mean.
No. But I like that. What was it? Dress rehearsal for eternity. That was great. And then Savani. And then also the history, what is it? History can prove you to be a prick.
Yeah, history can prove you to be the prick that you are.
Yeah. But, it's just, then we're in Louisiana, Stan, and it was like, you get that election for the so-called election between Mary Landrieu and the wiped-out Republican.
Yeah, and you know what? Let me just be really plain about that. I don't care. I don't care if she gets if Mary Landrieu gets beat like a barred mule. I don't.
Yeah. No, I'm kind of like I kind of reached out. Although she did have a good ad, where it's like it just shows what's her name, basically kind of mumbling incoherently. But I guess if any candidate, they could probably find that on any candidate with the way cameras are everywhere now. But. Because I'm the same way, Rick. I'm probably not going to vote. I did vote. And she's probably going to lose anyway. But because it's Louisiana stand. It's just, it's like one of the commercials the Republicans run is, Louisiana works hard and, they kind of paint her as some sort of elite. lady. That's what she does kind of end up being. But it's like the guy.
Well, I mean, Mary Landrieu is part of a political family that's been in some sort of power in Louisiana stand since God was a baby, right?
Yeah, since her dad was elected mayor in 69, her brother is the mayor of New Orleans. And, yeah, in fact, I remember the 69 election because that's my dad beat Harry Connick and for DA that year.
You know, how many, I just have to stop everything for a minute. How many programs are there where a guy calls in and says, I remember that because that was the year my dad beat Harry Connick for DA? Because I'm guessing nobody's ever said that on Rush Limbaugh or the Hannity job or, you know, Savage or any of those other creepies.
Yeah, well, you attract a special audience, an enlightened and sophisticated beyond their wildest dreams.
Well, I gotta ask you. I mean, you know, Louisiana cuisine being Louisiana cuisine, are there variations on the traditional, you know, turkey dressing, mashed potatoes? I mean,
the fried turkey. I don't think that's just Louisiana.
Oh, by the way, we talked about the electric turkey fryers that don't burn down your house, and I just happened to notice today. Yeah, they're $130.
Oh, that sounds pretty good, reasonable, I guess, if you want to do it. I mean, my cousin used to do that, but I think my mom's somebody's frying turkeys, and you just pick them up, and it's already cut, so it takes a lot of the work out, and that's for, we're going over to my, I go to my sister's house, it's all right, but it's just, it's like when my mother's birthday was last week, I said this on my lawyer's show, but it was like, out of the blue, my other sister just starts off going, just like Republican rant, you know, kind of a Republican, well, you gotta do something to, it was about Obama. It was about, she may as well just use
Rachel.
Yeah, she's like a big Republican. Yeah, well, most of my family is. In fact, I realized I went down a table, and I kept, except for me and my youngest brother, everybody else is Republicans. They think everything is going to be just fine with the Republicans, and it's just like Boss Man Wayne, that was who was on before. I mean, he just, if I could get them to listen, if they could comprehend it, which they wouldn't comprehend it. It's, you know, like I said last week, if I could get them, or a couple of weeks ago, if I could get them listening to you and Malloy, that might change their attitude, but they probably wouldn't have taken too long. They've been indoctrinated. They go, so, you know, it's just like, okay, say what you want. You know, I'll say what I'm going to say, but be wary. I can, you know, blow you out the water. Just like they want to talk religion. But if a bear on that, they wouldn't even know what hit them, because I don't think they even know the difference between Catholicism and Protestantism. I am serious. There's a freaking heart attack about that. But,
well, no, the difference between Catholicism, I mean, you know, Louisiana State, the difference between Catholicism and Protestantism is Catholics aren't heretics.
Well, yeah, but they're basically, they're all Catholics, my brothers and sisters. Well, my sister's more, my brother's kind of, you know, them being a Chinese, they kind of have a foot in the reason world to some extent. So, I'm just totally in on it. So, that's what's going on.
Well,
I can't be any.
No, this is the time of year that we have on our side, at least, you know, we have the conversations of how do we cope with the family holiday, and not the holiday itself, but how do we cope with our right wing family members during the family holiday? You know, what do you do with your drunk uncle who's, you know, lit out of his mind by 10:45, waiting for the football game, and talking about that Obama?
Oh, I've got an aunt like that. And, I mean, that's what I noticed at the table with the 9 or 10 adults I was sitting with at my mother's birthday. And I, because she kind of, it's funny because she thinks, because she got a pretty good deal, she doesn't realize Social Security, if the Republicans had it away, you wouldn't have your Social Security. I feel like telling her that. And telling my aunt that he's the real, basically, I mean, in the best way possible, right-wing fascist. I mean, it just kind of blows my mind to see where they think. I mean, I don't know what they think. Just unchecked capitalism is going to do it, and how it's going to work great for everybody. Everybody can pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. So we'll have to see. Well, I'll try and steer the conversation away from that because I don't feel like doing that. It's like religion. You want to believe it, believe it. You know, don't engage me. So, but just calling, wishing her a happy Thanksgiving. You did get that other payment I sent a while back.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah, yes, that did come in. Thank you very kindly.
Okay, I just wanted to check on that.
That was part of a previous frenzy of bill paying.
Okay. So, if I can, I'll have to see how finances work out. Maybe next week or so I'll send something.
Well, thank you very kindly. Well, so are you going over to Mama's for Thanksgiving or what?
Yeah. No, actually, I think we're right now going over to my sister's, and it's my youngest sister, but I think my mom's buying the turkey or something, and they're going to get reimbursed, and got me a six-pack of blueberry beer.
Ooh. Well, I wish a happy Thanksgiving to all of your family. See, I didn't know. I mean, I thought there might be some sort of crazy, you know, Cajun turkey gumbo thing going on.
Oyster dressing.
Oh, see? Yeah. See? I knew it. Oyster dressing. Oh! And I notice you don't have a problem calling it dressing either. It's dressing. Well, no, we call it dressing. I mean, that's the thing. I don't know. It's stuffing. Blech. Blech.
Yeah, it's always the dressing. It's like the regular dressing, like the stovetop stuff.
Yeah,
but then I always end up getting heartburn later after it.
Yeah, but you notice if you buy a box of stovetop, it says stuffing mix.
Yeah. I kind of like it tasting, but I notice a few things getting heartburn, and that seems to be one. Where it's like the oyster dressing, that's, you know, I could eat that all day.
Oh. We have to be kind of stingy with them just because of the history of it and sit there and cut them up, cut the oysters up in pieces before you. But do y'all just throw the whole critter in?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Wow.
Sometimes it's a mixture of both. And then,
because see, yeah. the next day is everything, because the next day, Jim, is the dressing sandwiches.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Well, I bought some pretty good roast beef. I'm gonna go fix that roast beef sandwich.
Tasty. Well, you have yourself a happy feast and my warmest thoughts to the family.
All right. Well, I just let you know, I finally got the computer working up again, so.
Awesome.
I'm back.
All right.
Aerosmith, check you later.
All right. Take care, Jim. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. And by the way, I've been meaning to mention this during the earlier part of the program. We had a suggestion in via Carol. She said, my sister Barbie is instant messaging me from Iowa. She's listening, wants to know if there's a possibility for a Jeopardy reality show about how dumb America is. It'd be like 9 categories of, really, how stupid are they? Oh, gosh, now I'm out there in the wilderness with Mr. Gruber. I said Americans are stupid. But, you know, that's something I thought about earlier today, and I'm going right back to the phones, by the way, for the remainder of the program. We keep talking about America is the greatest nation on earth. We're the best people in the world, and we got freedom. Well, how is it that the best nation on earth with the best people on earth wind up imprisoning more of their best people on earth in prison than any other of those lesser nations with less better people? Just ask it. So, hey, Barbie. Hi. It's cold here, too. Let's go to the other line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
What's happening, Kevin?
Not much. I'll take Bush 43 for $100.
And that's an audio daily double.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy. I just wanted...
George was worried about this crop when he said we're looking for people to, I don't know, pluck them.
Yep.
What are onions, Alex?
Yeah, well, that might be the American people too, because he was looking for people to help pluck.
Oh, we got plucked.
So. I just wanted to call in and wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. I used to work, not only as an EMT, but I did work for the county coroner. The excuse of not taking pictures because you ran out of a battery is just absurd. I would not call where it was a straight death, no possibility of murder or suicide or anything. And pictures were taken, measurements were taken just for legal reasons. If the guy ran out of a battery, he went down to the corner grocery store and got a new one. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. And for them even to offer that as an excuse just shows how gullible some people are. Because to those of us who even remotely have been involved in that, we know better. I mean, it's just, that's where my sense of outrage comes in, is the fact that they would even offer that as a reason why they didn't take crime scene photos or do measurements or anything, which is why the Brown family did their own autopsy, because you couldn't trust what the county did. So...
Well, I just anyway. I just had a note on my Facebook page from Shorty in L.A. Just consider these questions, Kevin.
Yep.
Big questions. I'm a police officer, race and gender not applicable. I'm involved in a scenario where I killed someone in 90 seconds. I didn't wait for backup. After the incident, I, 1, washed away blood evidence. 2, the first officer to interview me fails to take any notes. 3, investigators failed to measure the likely distance between me and the person I killed. 4, my gun is not tested for fingerprints. 5, I do not immediately turn my weapon over to investigators after the incident. 6, my interview with the detective conflicts with information given in my testimony. 7, an initial interview with investigators is delayed while I travel to the hospital with my superiors, even though I say I'm fine. 8, later I say I was punched and feared the next punch would kill me. 9, I testified that the suspect was coming at me, so I used my training and aimed for the heart and fired my weapon. Aimed for the head, maybe. Maybe it's aimed for the head. 10, medical examiner evidence shows that the suspect was shot in the back of the head and the exit wound was the forehead. More important, I am aired on worldwide television stating that I am confident I made the right decision and that I would have done nothing differently. The question is, should I be indicted? If I'm not indicted, did the grand jury hear this evidence? Just ask it.
Yep. And read through any police department, or any major police department, I'd say every police department, field training manual on what to do on an internal affairs investigation when there's a gun used. And what Shorty just mentioned there, I guarantee you it's in every book you're supposed to do X, Y, and Z, all of which were violated.
Well, but remember, they only had one taser in the department.
And it was too bulky for him to wear.
Right. And remember, too, that there were no photographs because the medical examiner's camera battery was unjuicy.
Oh, yeah, well. Like I said, that's total BS because I've lived.
You think that? I'm just curious. If the demon, if the Hulk Hogan demon had landed that second blow and done kilted Darren Wilson like Darren Wilson done said he was a going to do, you reckon the medical examiner would have had dead batteries then? Or do the corpses of 18-year-old young black men? Have the mysterious power to just drain batteries at 40 paces.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So, man, that's cynical.
Well, that's what we've become. I mean, you know, Bill stated it earlier, and if unfortunately in this country, if you grew up on the other side of middle class, you develop that pretty early in life. And I'm white. Imagine the guy that grew up in a project, a black man, who gets stopped by the police for nothing more than saggy pants and asking what he's doing. Police may let him go on his way, but imagine after a while how angry that makes you. Just that harassment. And, you know, it goes on and on. We all know it. And so I think Wayne's right in what he said earlier. We've still got to keep working. But we've got to make sure those people we support in the Democratic Party are progressives and will work for us and not themselves. And anyway. I know that it's getting close to the end of the show, so I'll leave and just say...
You guys do a better job of watching the clock than I do, Kevin.
Well, I've got one. I don't know if you can hear it here, but it talks to me.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yep. So, anyway, I'll let you go. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll catch you on Monday, if not sooner.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. A happy holiday and a hopefully wonderful feast to you.
You too, Bob.
Bye now. My buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. And that brings us to the end of the program this evening. I want to thank Sal for jumping in and taking us down to $160 to go to finish off the fundraising week. And a program announcement. I'll be here in the chair on the air for Friday on the front porch on the 28th of November. I hope you'll join as well. And here's my hope. I'm hoping for a really rousing Friday on the front porch conversation because I'm gonna carry through with a threat I've made in the past if the conversation is really rolling. I've said in the past that if we had enough callers and just enough traffic and enough business to talk about, that I'd expand the program to 6 hours. Well, Friday evening on the front porch, I'm gonna expand the program to 6 hours based on y'all's participation. So, and I do this because I know our dear friend Mike Malloy and Kathy and Molly are, I think, traveling for the holiday. And safe travels to them. So I'll go from 6 p.m. to midnight with a post-Thanksgiving Friday on the front porch. And it's dependent on your participation. So thank you, everyone, one and all. We may yet finish November okay. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Good night, Barbie. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.